to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to the NXT Podcast. Once again, I am your host. My name is Zachary Smith. I am overjoyed to be back with you again. I have been a busy boy this week, ladies and gentlemen. I did the NXT Podcast last week, obviously. I did the show Saturday with Matt, previewing Money in the Bank as well. And as I said on that show, you can't quite get away from me. So, sorry about that, or you're welcome, depending on how you feel about it. Now, as you know, generally we start with the news going on in the wrestling world, but, as I said, Matt and I previewed the Money in the Bank pay-per-view that aired this last Sunday, and Matt put out his review of the Money in the Bank pay-per-view and the match specifically. And I would say, go ahead and go back and listen to that. It was a very good podcast by Matt. And go back and listen to that preview if you want to laugh about all the stuff we got wrong, because we certainly did get a couple things wrong. But I do want to throw my two cents in. Obviously, Matt and Ashley talked a bit about it, as well as the Raw review from this last week, too. I would highly recommend that one as well. But Matt brought up a lot of good points for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Now, obviously, he wasn't happy with the match itself, the Money in the Bank match. And, as I said, he raised some good points in his review, that it was kind of embarrassing as a wrestling fan, and that if you had somebody at your house who was not a wrestling fan or watched it very casually, it would be very hard to explain. And, as I didn't get a chance to review the show as a whole, I do just want to say the show as a whole was actually very good. As we speculated on the preview show, there were a few matches that were added, but as far as the main show itself, it was very good. And I tend to agree somewhat with Matt on the Money in the Bank itself. There were a lot of extra things put in there that maybe you didn't need. I will say that overall, as I watched the Money in the Bank matches themselves, I gotta say I enjoyed it, to a point. Could it have been more serious? Absolutely. Could there have been less comedy and cutaways and gags? Absolutely. But I think the thing here is that whether you enjoyed the match for what it was, like I did. Now, as you know, Matt and I a couple times have disagreed on some of the more cinematic matches. Obviously, we disagreed on The Fiend and John Cena at WrestleMania. We disagree a little bit here, although I think we actually kind of have the same point. I do agree that there's a lot in there that didn't feel like a Money in the Bank match. It didn't feel like wrestling. It felt like entertainment, and it felt like the WWE trying to make a movie. But I think the Money in the Bank match could have been fixed with just a couple of changes. And hopefully, going forward, they'll keep this in mind, as this more cinematic style is still very new to WWE. Keep in mind, they're used to just doing traditional wrestling matches, or if they do anything like this, it's generally in front of a crowd where you can't do a lot of these things. And obviously, if we didn't have the COVID situation going on right now, we would have had a traditional Money in the Bank match that, frankly, I think would have been better as a whole. But again, you have the bones of a very entertaining match here. But I think they made a couple of mistakes with it. And the biggest mistake was simply that they did not do what they hinted at, which was the Money in the Bank match itself was going to take place along the entire pay-per-view. If you remember, the idea was originally that we were going to start the Money in the Bank match, and then probably before and then after each match on the card, we were going to get a little update of the Money in the Bank match and cut back to corporate, where they were all fighting. And I think that if we had not had all of the gags and all of the comedy happening in a match that I believe was 27 minutes, with a situation like that, you have 27 minutes of it, and the tone didn't really change at any point. Even when Baron Corbin committed attempted murder on Rey Mysterio and Aleister Black throwing them off of a roof, thank goodness for that second roof, huh? That didn't feel serious, it felt like another gag. And 15 minutes into a gag match, you start rolling your eyes because you're looking at nothing but gags and comedy. And I think that if we had simply interspersed the Money in the Bank match throughout the entire pay-per-view, I feel like it would have broken it up more, and you would have remembered it more fondly. Just as a fan, I think I would have. I think that commercials get annoying when you're watching a television show, but it also helps break up the action a bit. It helps you to kind of reset when you come back from a commercial. And I think by making the decision they did, which is that we're just going to run this match in its entirety, you made a mistake. If you have it going over the entire show, it builds up suspense to see the next segment, as opposed to just seeing one thing happen after the other. I also think that you could have fixed a few of the things in the match. I don't know that we needed to see Brother Love coming out of the restroom, except for the fact that Vince McMahon thinks that that's very, very funny. Because you see, fans, he was coming out of the restroom, which is very funny to Vince and nobody else. That's the kind of thing that we've heard from a lot of people that Vince McMahon really loves, is toilet humor. And that was quite literally toilet humor. Brother Love coming out of the restroom. Don't think you needed that. Don't think you needed the Doink the Clown cameo. Considering, one, that Matt Bourne has been dead for some time, and as far as I am concerned, he's the only Doink the Clown. Is he really? No. But in my heart, yes. I feel like you didn't need Paul Heyman and a food fight. I feel like, as a competitor, if I'm in a Money in the Bank match, it makes sense to me that you would go room to room and you would be fighting with these people you're trying to best, but it does make more sense that you would want to get to the top as quickly as possible as opposed to stopping for a food fight. Again, I feel like if this had been cut into the pay-per-view, maybe we have a different situation. Maybe that doesn't go over as poorly. But given the fact that that was X amount of minutes into a 27-minute match, it turned into gag after gag after gag after gag. And then I think if you're going to have Baron Corbin throw Rey Mysterio and Aleister Black off of a roof, there needs to be some consequences for that, even if there was a second roof somehow. I feel like they shouldn't be able to just come back out on Monday Night Raw not hurt at all. That seems odd to me that you would even do somebody throwing somebody off of a roof. But what do I know? I think it's weird that AJ Styles saw The Undertaker's picture and was super scared of it. I think that if he was going to do that, he should have been a different character when he came back. When he came back for that gauntlet match, the only thing he said was, "Yeah, I got buried alive. So what? That was then, this is now." Which, one, attempts to invalidate what was one of, if not the best matches at WrestleMania. But two, it doesn't leave AJ Styles anywhere to go. And the reports came out that AJ wasn't super happy with the way he came back, and he had different ideas for his character, because being buried alive by The Undertaker is a great opportunity to change somebody. They didn't do that. They kept AJ Styles the same character he is. I love AJ Styles. He's one of my favorite wrestlers. But he didn't change at all. And that means he just got beat down by The Undertaker at a bunch of different occasions, then had a match with him, then got beat again for nothing. At least when people would lose to The Fiend, it gives them something to do with their character. Daniel Bryan changed, Finn Balor changed, John Cena is gone. But this didn't allow anywhere to go. So if you simply switch that and you have AJ come out as a more of a Stone Cold Killer type, and much more serious and much more interested in doing harm to other people, and then you have him be the one that throws Alistair and Rey off the roof, I feel like that would have helped as well, as opposed to just Alistair kicking him back into a room he was scared of, and then we don't see much of him after that. I'm absolutely fine with Asuka winning. I think on the preview show I said that that's who I wanted to win. So from that perspective, it was great. Asuka is your Money in the Bank winner. And more so than that, obviously on Monday Night Raw, Becky Lynch announced that she is pregnant, so she's not going to be able to continue as your Raw Women's Champion. And obviously, first and foremost, congratulations to Becky and to Seth Rollins, who didn't look super-duper happy about being a new dad, but that's okay. That's okay. You know what? People react in different ways, and Becky was very happy. Seth seemed very tired. And so, because Asuka was your Money in the Bank winner, Asuka is now your Raw Women's Champion. That segment simply does not work if Shayna had won the Money in the Bank contract. You want Becky to go out with a feel-good moment, and if Shayna is there, you heard what Shayna said about Becky Lynch being pregnant on Raw. She would have had to do that out there, which is going to ruin the moment. She can't physically attack Becky now because Becky's pregnant. So that just would have made for an awkward segment. But we lucked out, and it was Asuka. And so because it's Asuka, now you have Asuka in a different position than you did before, which is great. And last but not least, I'm happy that Otis is your Money in the Bank winner. Unless he does what he said and he only uses it for a tag team title shot, in which case, I'm gonna be real mad. Because that's not the point, and I feel like you're not seeing the forest through the trees there. But, it seems weird to me that AJ had the briefcase, then it slipped, then Otis caught it, so Otis won. Just seems like the winner should be the one that takes the case off of the hook, because that's what they've always done. So I think, while I do agree with Matt about a lot of what he said, I feel like there were a few easy fixes. And people in higher-up positions are fond of saying, well, hindsight's 20/20, and it's very easy to book after the fact. That is true, but I think it also would have been easy to see that 27 minutes of comedy is a bit much. But I'll tell you what doesn't have comedy. See what I did? That's a great transition by me. See what I did? And that's NXT from this week. So let's get into it. We actually start with a recap of the two title matches we had last week. Io Shirai and Charlotte Flair, and Adam Cole and the Velveteen Dream. And it occurs to me that they were both disappointing for different reasons. Adam Cole Velveteen Dream didn't feel like a big match, and I think that's for a couple reasons. I think it's because they didn't really have much face-to-face time. Adam Cole did pre-recorded videos, and I'm fine with that. It's safety first. But it hurt the buildup of this match. It felt disjointed. It felt like the Velveteen Dream wasn't worth showing up in person. And obviously, with everything that's going on with Dream right now, again, you know, nothing having been proven or disproven, you're obviously not going to put the championship on him, which puts you in an awkward position as a company. And so while they had a good match, didn't feel like a takeover match, it didn't feel like an NXT title match that I think, if none of this were happening, I think it would have felt a lot bigger. I'd be interested to see what would have happened if there had been a crowd, because I don't know if the crowd would have been as into it as they have with other matches, just because the story here has been a little bit thin. And Io Shirai and Charlotte Flair was disappointing because for some reason we decided that Io was going to use her opportunity at the Women's Championship, and then Charlotte was going to get herself intentionally disqualified with a kendo stick, and then Rhea Ripley was going to come out, and then we were going to give Io and Ripley a side quest of a feud while Charlotte Flair goes on with the NXT Women's title, which is odd. And while I'd like to see Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley, I'd like to see it for the NXT Women's title. Because in addition to the fact that with Charlotte Flair as the NXT champion, the ratings haven't improved. That's a lot to put on one performer, but if you're going to bring her in to try and build up NXT, seems important to note the fact that it hasn't helped. And thus far, she's worked with Rhea Ripley, who she beat at WrestleMania. She's worked with Mia Yim, who she beat and never was in danger once of losing to Mia Yim. And then she had a good match, I guess, with Io Shirai until it was cut short because she got herself disqualified. And she's a heel. To a degree, that's expected. But when you have somebody like Charlotte Flair who's that good in the ring, if you're going to have the title on her, I don't understand why you're not using that opportunity to help out the other women on the show. And thus far, they simply have had no interest in doing that whatsoever. So I guess Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley are going to be going forward. I quite legitimately have no idea who would even challenge Charlotte Flair at this point. Bianca Belair is on the main roster now. There doesn't feel like there's somebody ready. Dakota Kai's a heel. They're not doing heel on heel. I don't know what we're doing next with that, and frankly, whatever it is, I'm not that excited for it. But as we start the main show, they're setting up Imperium and Thatcher and Riddle, set up for the tag titles being attacked last week, and we're starting with Matt Riddle and Timothy Thatcher. Matt Riddle still has both tag belts on his shoulders, and Matt Riddle is his goofy self, and Thatcher is all business. It occurs to me at this point in the show, not later, that it was going to be weird when Pete Dunne came back because they were going to be a team, and I thought there might be some weirdness there with Pete Dunne coming back in. But as you know, having seen the show, we don't really have to worry about that anymore. And we have Imperium coming out next. Their theme is great. They're represented by Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel this week. And Morrow points out that Bartel and Aichner have the advantage here as far as working as a team. I like that because that is important. It's a small thing that's important. Matt Riddle and Timothy Thatcher, for all intents and purposes, are a brand new tag team. And Aichner and Bartel have been teaming for some time. Kind of puts it in your head that something could go wrong in terms of Matt Riddle and Thatcher because they're a new team. And then we have, during the match, which is very physical and very good, we have a miscommunication, and Thatcher gets hit on the apron, and Thatcher gets down and starts leaving. Says that he's done with Riddle. I believe there's a miscommunication, and somebody was launched into Thatcher by Riddle, completely by accident. But yeah, Thatcher leaves, and we have a two-on-one situation, and Matt Riddle fights back for a moment. I was a little bit nervous that they were just going to have Matt Riddle beat Imperium by himself, but Imperium actually hits what is essentially a doomsday device from a powerbomb position. I forget what they call it, but that's what the move is, and Imperium wins the tag titles. I wasn't expecting that at all, and so I sat up in my chair a bit because that's an interesting way to go. It sets up a story with Riddle and Thatcher that we're going to go over in just a second. And I think it helps Imperium that they don't just have the UK title on Walter, they have extra gold. Anytime you have a stable, one of the things that they like to do to establish that stable as dominant is have multiple champions in that stable. And I love Imperium, so I'm not mad at it. This didn't feel like a title match, really, at all. It just felt kind of thrown together, but it was very good for what it was. And it's odd because it seemed like Thatcher and Riddle were getting along, but then one miscommunication just breaks up the team, so I guess they were on stricter terms than I thought. And then Thatcher, an interviewer, catches up with while he's walking in the back, and he says he couldn't do it anymore. He says, I want to be a tag champ, but not with him. And Riddle comes up behind him. He says, what the hell was that about? Thatcher starts walking away, and Riddle pulls him back. They start fighting. They have a pull apart. And at this point, wrote that Thatcher and Riddle should make for a good match when it does happen. Turns out it's going to happen a lot sooner than we thought. And once again, we're going to replay that super-de-duper awesome finish of Flair getting herself disqualified against Io Shirai before Rhea Ripley came back out, first time since WrestleMania. And then we have a Rhea Ripley promo in the back. Basically says, WrestleMania didn't go as I planned, and I haven't been able to sleep or get it out of my mind since. So the thought of Flair running around with my title sickens me. She says, the person who's taking that title back to NXT is going to be me. Io Shirai had her chance, and she blew it. That's not true at all. And Io better get another shot at that title, because that finish was stupid. And I want a not stupid finish. And Ripley ends it by saying, as a stupid old man once said, we've only just begun. And initially, I was confused as to whether it was going to be Rhea and Charlotte or Rhea and Io based on that promo. Traditional wrestling logic leads me to believe at this point that it's Io, and they're doing a side quest kind of feud where they just blow it off with one match, and the winner of that is the next challenger, but I don't know. And we cut back to Matt Riddle. He's talking to William Regal on a pad on FaceTime. And apparently we're getting Thatcher and Riddle tonight per William Regal. So that was fast. And then Thatcher runs up and attacks Matt Riddle again. They're in like a backstage area with equipment, and he takes a TV and hits Riddle with a TV, which frankly is just, it's a rude thing to do to somebody, but it's effective, I suppose. And we cut back to the ring, and we have big old jobber entrances for Tony Nese and Jake Atlas. If you don't know, a jobber entrance is what an enhancement talent gets, which is to say they do not get an entrance. The TV cuts back, and they're already in the ring. It sets up the person as not as important. You don't want to waste TV time on their entrance, and it makes whatever they're about to do feel less important, so it seems weird to me that they're doing it for a tournament match. What also seems weird to me is that they mentioned that Tony Nese is mathematically eliminated due to the fact that he hasn't won a match in the tournament, so this match doesn't really matter at all as far as the tournament goes. Either Tony Nese would win for no reason, or Jake Atlas would beat somebody that has not got a win in this tournament. But alright, we're having the match, fine. And Jake Atlas gets busted open a bit hard way, just on like the side of his head, like by his temple. And that it doesn't bleed very much, but blood always makes a match feel more important. And I always wish that they would bring that back on kind of a rare basis for big matches. I don't necessarily want to see it on every match, because not every match warrants it, and it can be used as a bit of a crutch. But for big matches and big feuds, a lot of times blood can help. It makes things feel more intense and real and dangerous. And so I always hope at some point they're going to bring that back, although I doubt it. And they have an alright match. Nothing special, frankly. And Atlas hits that top rope cartwheel DDT, which is still an awesome move, and he wins, and he's moving on in the tournament. It occurs to me that DDT is super cool looking and looks like it would hurt a lot if he really did it. I don't know if that is going to be his primary finisher going forward. It seems like it's a bit like that move Alberto Del Rio used to do, where he would set his opponent up in the corner and tie their legs in the ring post and then jump down onto them. Because it took a lot of cooperation to pull that move off, and his opponent had to be just so and kind of sitting up halfway for no reason. The apron DDT kind of reminds me of that, where your opponent has to be in kind of an unnatural position for you to set that move up. So I don't know if that's going to be his finisher going forward, but it's a spectacular finisher if it is. So Del Rio's was always bad because it always looked bad, but this one, the two times I've seen it, has looked very good. Jake Atlas wins, and then he just poses. There's no interview after the match. And between the lack of an entrance and lack of an interview, feels a lot less important this week, this tournament, than it has. I don't know if we're rushing. I don't know. But it just doesn't feel very important this week. Hopefully we'll fix that going forward. And we have Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly. They're talking on basically a Zoom meeting. And they mentioned that Kyle O'Reilly's filming a movie. I don't know if that's actually what he's doing, but he hasn't been on TV, so that would make sense. And then Bobby Fish joins in, then Roderick Strong joins in, and they're talking and catching up, and they mentioned Dexter Lumis. So that's going to be a thing, which I'm great with that. And then they nominate Roderick Strong to take care of him. Roderick Strong is the sacrificial lamb of the Undisputed Era. He's the first guy you have to go through, always. And so, you knew it was going to be Roderick Strong, and that Roderick Strong is going to lose that match, because he's definitely the fall guy for the group. And they go on a little bit more. Wasn't very important. It was really just, I think, to set up Dexter Lumis and Roderick Strong, I suppose. So it's interesting to see Dexter Lumis have more of a direction. I do still hope that he's just a creepy serial killer guy that's hanging out in different parts of the building. Hope that doesn't go away ever. Hope that stays for the rest of his career, because it's great. We cut from that to a Karrion Kross and Scarlett video package. Basically says Ciampa was the first, but he was not the last. It's a lot of what you've already seen with Karrion Kross and Scarlett. There's more of them in it, and they're talking, which is good. But hopefully we'll see him in the ring next week, because it feels weird to have a lot more promo for somebody who's been on the show now. Feels weird to see them in a video package but not see them on the show. So hopefully next week we'll get Karrion Kross back. And I would imagine that his first feud would be Ciampa, based on how he debuted attacking Ciampa. But I don't know. We'll have to see. But Karrion Kross and Scarlett's entrance is fantastic, and he's really good in the ring. Scarlett's a really good manager, so I hope they do great things with him. Then we're interviewing Swerve Scott in the back, and it turns out that his match against Jack Gallagher is win or go home for Swerve, and Swerve says the key is confidence. He says he feels untouchable, at which point I wrote, he feels untouchable despite being very, very touchable. He's lost in this tournament. I don't understand. I like Swerve a lot, though, and I hope that they do more with him going forward. He's a very good talker, and he's obviously a very good wrestler. I just hope that what they do with him after is substantial, because I feel like he has a lot to give, and they haven't really tapped into his potential yet. Then we cut into Triple H and Shawn Michaels. They're wearing DX shirts. It starts with the DX music. And then they say, tomorrow is the 25th anniversary of the first In Your House pay-per-view. And then Road Dogg pops up. And they reminisce about each having matches at the last In Your House pay-per-view. And they said, Hunter, didn't you have a match at In Your House? He says, no. No. And then they remember that you did have a match with Henry O. Godwin, and Triple H cuts. He says, it's not important. It's not important. And they say that it's the 25th anniversary of the In Your House pay-per-view, and on June 7th, we're going to have NXT TakeOver In Your House. So I mean, I don't know if that's just another NXT takeover. I don't know what would make it different. The In Your House pay-per-views themselves, when they were pay-per-views, were a cheaper pay-per-view. So there's no pay-per-views anymore, so I don't know what's going to make it different. I don't know why we needed DX to make this announcement either. Unless DX is going to wrestle at In Your House, which I guess they could. I also don't know if there's going to be fans, so that's concerning. But I mean, NXT TakeOver In Your House is a good title, and NXT has always done a great job with TakeOvers, so I'm excited that there's actually going to be a TakeOver. Lately, we've just had TakeOver matches, for lack of better terminology. A lot of them haven't lived up to that, because there's no crowd to feed off of. But hopefully, we either have some crowd at this TakeOver, or they're able to do something different with it. Should be interesting. So, June 7th, we'll have something interesting to review, at least. And then Finn Balor's out next for his match with Cameron Grimes that we set up last week. We're still not sure who attacked and maybe kidnapped Finn Balor, which is weird that he's taken this weird side road. Because I feel like if I got attacked and then maybe just maybe kidnapped, I don't know that I would stop to fight another dude before I figured out who the dude is that attacked. And again, can't stress this part enough, maybe kidnapped me. But Cameron Grimes is out next. This is a rare heel versus heel match. The WWE doesn't do this very much with two heels. They don't do two faces very often either, but heel versus heel I feel like is even more rare. And Cameron Grimes actually gets a lot in this match. Finn is doing a good job of making Cameron Grimes look like a credible threat. It's hard to do that in a match where you think that Finn is going to win, and where Finn is certainly the bigger name, but Finn is that good, and Cameron Grimes is holding up his end of the deal as well. And then Finn and Cameron Grimes are outside the ring, and Damian Priest walks in from out of frame. And Finn sees him, and Finn hits him, knocks him down, and then as Balor is getting up on the apron, Priest hits Balor in the leg with the nightstick in retaliation, and then Grimes actually pins Balor to win. So, surprise win for Cameron Grimes. That's very good for Cameron Grimes, but it's also setting up something for Finn afterwards. And Damian Priest, Finn Balor should make a really good match. And then Damian Priest brings a chair into the ring as well as the nightstick. Feels like overkill to get the chair and the nightstick. Seems like more pain than you would need to necessarily inflict on somebody. But I don't want to tell Damian Priest how to run his life, you know? And then he sits the chair on Balor after he attacks him and hits the Reckoning onto the steel chair. And then he sits on the chair, which is on top of Balor, and he says, if I want my name to live forever, I figure, why not take out a prince like I did 3 weeks ago? And so, turns out it was Damian Priest that took out Balor. And again, maybe kidnapped him. That was unexpected. I didn't think it would be Damian Priest, but I like it. I'm certainly not mad at it. And so, presumably next week we'll have more about this. Damian Priest and Finn Balor. Again, this would be a heel versus heel thing, unless they're turning Finn Balor, which I certainly hope they don't, because Finn is fantastic as a heel. He's better as a heel than a face. Didn't think I would say that, but he's really, really, really good as a heel. I'm fine with doing a heel versus heel match. It worked with Cameron Grimes and Finn Balor. It would certainly work with Damian Priest. So I'm interested to see what they do next week as they go out and try to build this more. And then for our next tournament match, we have Jack Gallagher out first. I don't know what he was doing with these tattoos he got. It feels like when you're at the tattoo parlor and they have pictures up on the wall and they have like a little catalog of inspiration drawings, and Jack just like closed his eyes and picked 3 or 4 and was like, let's do this. And the tattoo artist was like, well, you want to put them on your shoulder? And Jack said, no, shut up. I want to put both I want to put two of my arms big. I want big. You want them centered? No, I don't want them centered, idiot. And then the ship, I want to put it on my chest. He said, oh, like upper chest? No, stupid. Whole chest. Put it on the whole chest. What I know to be true as somebody with a few tattoos is that that chest probably didn't feel good. That's not an area that gets bothered a lot. That's a big tattoo for a tattoo that doesn't look intimidating at all. Like, it's a ship, man. At least when Randy did it, he got skulls, something. Like, he clearly didn't think about it at all. But at least it was skulls. You got a ship on your whole chest. Swerve comes out and he's walking to the ring, but then he's attacked by Tony Nese. Because earlier in his interview, Swerve made a crack about not being able to get a single win in the tournament. He said something to the effect of, if I couldn't get a single win in this tournament, I would be embarrassed, which was taking a jab at Tony Nese, who, again, no wins in this tournament, mathematically eliminated. So Tony Nese attacks Swerve, and Gallagher takes most of the match because of it, and Swerve is doing a great job selling, and Swerve gets in a little bit of offense, hits his finisher, and Gallagher kicks out of it. That's the second or third time now that somebody just in this tournament's kicked out of Swerve's finisher. Don't know that that's great for his finisher going forward, but what do I know? I'm a nerd. But then, surprisingly, Gallagher hits Swerve with a spinning punch and pins him. So Swerve is out of the tournament, mathematically, which is disappointing. Seems like Swerve's now going into a feud with Tony Nese, who, I just want to remind you real quick, was unable to win a single match in this tournament. So high stakes between these two losers of the tournament. Cool. That's all right. And then that would have been fine, except even though Gallagher just won, Gallagher and Swerve are both mathematically eliminated from the tournament, which means it was either going to be Swerve continuing in the tournament or nobody going forward, and we chose nobody. It seems like an odd choice given those two, but again, you know, what do I know? I'm a nerd. That's fine, I guess. Tony Nese and Swerve should be fine. I don't know what they're going to do with Gallagher going forward. He's probably going to go get some more tattoos. Then we have a video package of Gargano and Candice. They're at home again, eating dinner. They're rewatching a part of Gargano beating Dijakovic. And they're doing this cool thing where it goes from saturated with color to basically cuts to black and white, and they kind of slow it down so you see the trail of where their head was. It's kind of off-putting. And they are smiling when it's colorful, and then they drop the smiles and get very serious when it goes to black and white. Gargano, it cuts to black and white. He says, if you speak my name, there will be consequences. It is our way or none. Candice mentions that how she beat Casey Catanzaro. And as she says Casey Catanzaro, Gargano says, the ninja. Candice says she's not a ninja. Johnny says, the warrior. Candice says she's not a warrior. Gargano says, the American. She says, okay, yeah, she's an American. And as somebody who saw Casey Catanzaro, an American Ninja Warrior, I thought that was hilarious. And Candice says that Mia Yim is given opportunity after opportunity despite not winning a thing. This is where it goes black and white. She says that she's given opportunities for what? She doesn't win a thing. Which is true. If you listen to when I was talking about Mia Yim and Charlotte Flair, that was a big point I brought up. This does not reflect on Mia Yim as a person, but Mia Yim, the wrestling character, loses a lot and was given this opportunity for seemingly no reason. So great point by Candice. Candice says, despite not winning a thing, she says, I refuse to be that pathetic. During this whole package, Gargano was kind of running down Keith Lee to set up that match, presumably. He says, the glory that you're looking for doesn't exist. It's just a fancy catchphrase. These people are leeches, and they'll bleed you dry and move on. And they basically toast to each other. And so, presumably, I don't know if we're getting Candace and Charlotte, doesn't seem like it, but it seems like we're getting Gargano and Keith Lee, which should be just awesome. And if somebody has to beat Keith Lee, I think I'm okay with it being Gargano if Keith Lee's gonna move up, or if it's just another match for Keith Lee to take. Keith Lee's one of my favorites, not gonna be mad about him winning. So I'd be very, very excited to see that going forward too. And so, we cut to Thatcher already in the ring. Again, real jobber entrance, but that, okay, that's fine. They also say that next week, the Cruiserweight tournament continues, and we're getting Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai. And while I am annoyed that it is Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley on a side quest rather than for the NXT title, which it absolutely should be, if nothing else, that should be a really, really, really good match, which makes me happy. Matt Riddle comes out next. He looks pissed off, which is always the best version of Matt Riddle. I think it was Ashley and I that were talking about it on Twitter earlier, and it really made me think about the fact that Matt Riddle has this character of a very aloof, kind of goofy guy, stoner gimmick, but when he's in the ring, especially after he's been attacked, he's very intense. And you forget that he has that gear because he is such a laid-back person, seemingly in real life, that he has that switch he can flip and he becomes a killer. He becomes very focused. And that is my favorite version of Matt Riddle. I can take or leave the aloof kind of stoner deal, but the intense version where he's angry, I love it. And I hope we see more of it. I feel like if he ever turns heel, he'd be able to show that more. And I'm definitely interested. And it occurs to me that it's very rare to see a team break up and then have a match anywhere near this fast. It's very interesting, because usually you'll have a team break up and then they have some build up back and forth. This was quick. I don't know if they needed another match last minute or if they have different ideas, but we go from Riddle and Thatcher defending the titles, to Thatcher abandoning Riddle, to next segment, Thatcher being interviewed and then a pull apart, to next segment after a match, Riddle getting the match against Thatcher and Thatcher attacking Riddle again. That's super fast in WWE to set up a feud like this. And I like that Thatcher isn't like Pete Dunne. He doesn't find Riddle particularly charming. He actually can't stand him. And while it's very fun to watch Matt Riddle, I imagine that if I were in a team with Matt Riddle, and I'm a guy like Timothy Thatcher, that would also get on my nerves as well, so I can kinda understand. It's weird that he flipped on Riddle so quickly off of a miscommunication that it seems like he would have been able to see that was not intentional. But I like that Thatcher turned on him, and when Pete Dunne comes back, you can maybe have a little bit of a thing between Pete Dunne and Matt Riddle, like because Pete Dunne is the one that picked the partner for Matt Riddle. And they have a very, very good, very intense match. And Thatcher basically has Matt Riddle in a hold on his leg, and Riddle kind of rolls him up and gets a three count out of nowhere. It's a good finish for something like this because it doesn't hurt either one. And you can still continue the feud because that wasn't a definitive win. It was just a roll-up. And we further prove that because Thatcher attacks Riddle again right after his entrance music is playing. And he puts him in an armbar, which he had put him in a couple times during the match. Matt Riddle starts tapping. There's obviously not a match going on anymore. He lets it go, stands up, and then puts the armbar back on again, holding it. And he's holding it as we're going off the air. So going forward, we're going to have Thatcher and Riddle. I feel like this is going to bring out a lot of good things in Matt Riddle. He's not going to have the option to be as goofy as he normally would be. I think that he's going to be pissed off next week. And again, pissed off Matt Riddle is my favorite Matt Riddle. So I think Thatcher can bring some stuff out of Matt Riddle that we haven't necessarily seen yet. So I'm excited personally for that. We'll have that. We'll have a couple more Cruiserweight tournament matches that I hope are a bigger deal. Feels like we may be losing steam with it as far as the presentation goes, but it could just been, you know, a one-week thing because we had a lot going on. Seems like we're going to have some kind of confrontation between Gargano and Keith Lee, or maybe just a response from Keith Lee. Hopefully we'll see Karrion Kross next week in action with Scarlett. And then we'll have Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley. I would assume they're going to have Charlotte Flair back on the show, so that should be super great and a super meaningful feud. I don't know if Rhea Ripley, Io Shirai, the winner, is number one contender, but we'll see. And again, that should be a fantastic match. But I'm already excited to talk to you next week about NXT. But with the show going off the air, that means it's my time to go off of the air. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you very, very much for allowing me to come into your homes once again through your devices. Again, we did the Money in the Bank preview on Saturday. Matt had his solo show talking about Money in the Bank, and then Matt and Ashley did another show discussing a bit of that and Monday Night Raw. I would suggest you go and check those out. Those are fantastic. As well as all of our podcasts here. Aiden just put out an AEW recap. Matt's putting out retrospectives. We have Ashley and a lot of people on this network that are fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, my name has been Zachary Smith. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, I am ZachNXT. That's ZachNXT. Any questions, comments, concerns? You want to tell me I suck? You want to tell me I'm great? I'd love to hear either one, more the great than the suck, but you know, whatever. You can hit me up if you got any questions. May end up on the show. A lot of what I talked about today came from Twitter. But hit me up. Let me know what you think, what you're thinking about, and I'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, you've been great. Thanks for listening.